Welcome, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Today is the 9th of September, 2013, and today we're talking once again to Professor Michelle Chalcedovsky, of course, of globalresearch.ca. Michelle, thank you so much for your time today as you join us on the brink of a very, very important world occasion as we stand on the brink of another major war in the Middle East. And this time, perhaps things are even more serious than they have been in the previous altercations, if that can even be imagined. Let's talk for a moment about the implications of what's happening with this strike, at least this potential strike on Syria. What do you think are the ramifications that we're looking at if the United States does go ahead with this strike?
Well, first of all, this war has been on the drawing board of the Pentagon for years, and it is part of a broader military agenda. It is part of a Middle East Central Asia war agenda. The war on Syria is a stepping stone to the war on Iran, and it also threatens Russia and China, so that it, in effect, if this war is launched on the pretext of a punitive attack based on a lie, because the chemical weapons pretext is a lie, amply documented, the rebels, the U.S.-supported rebels, are those which have chemical weapons in their possession, as confirmed by the United Nations Observer Mission, the Turkish media, not to mention CNN, which actually confirmed that the rebels were being trained by Western special forces. So the pretext to wage this war is based on a lie, and this is no single country war. It is a war theater which will extend from the eastern Mediterranean to the Chinese border with Afghanistan and Pakistan. At the moment, there are three or four distinct war theaters in the Middle East. There's Afghanistan, Iraq, Palestine, as well as Libya. There's a situation of near civil war in Egypt. If Syria is attacked, the whole region will explode. Lebanon will be involved. Turkey and Israel are allies of the United States. Turkey is a heavyweight in NATO. Turkey is already preparing a ground war. There's a deployment, a massive deployment of naval power in the eastern Mediterranean. This could be the prelude to a much broader war, and people across the land should understand the seriousness, and they should understand the lies and fabrications of the heads of state and heads of government, not only Obama. And they should also address the issue of media disinformation, because without the media, without war propaganda, this war could not proceed. The lies have to stick, and the media is conveying those lies and giving the lies a legitimacy that this is a humanitarian undertaking. No, it is not a humanitarian undertaking. And in all likelihood, although there is no actual proof, the rebels were behind the chemical weapons attack. And we know that the rebels are in fact paid mercenaries financed by the Western Military Alliance. So in effect, the United States and its allies are behind these atrocities. And they have right from the beginning. These rebels are trained. They're trained in Qatar and Saudi Arabia. They have training manuals. The atrocities, the executions are following a pattern. And Western intelligence is behind these rebels. MI6, CIA have in fact a presence on the ground among rebel forces.
Well, in regards to what you just point out there with the fact that this has been on the Pentagon planning table for a number of years, of course, we do know this, stretching back at least to General Wesley Clark's admission that apparently this was being planned as a part of a five-year plan by the neocon cabal back during the Bush administration, which included, of course, Syria and Libya and Iraq on that hit list that he identified. But even in terms of recent events, you mentioned the naval deployment in the Mediterranean. But as you point out, this deployment was decided on even before this contested August 21st chemical weapons attack.
Well, absolutely. In fact, there were naval deployments even during the Olympic Games with French and British warships. But if you look at the timing of the recent naval deployment, it took place before the tragic events of August 21, in other words, the chemical weapons attack. So it was not in response to the chemical weapons attack. It was, in fact, already done prior to that, and the chemical weapons attack provided a pretext to a deployment, a military deployment, which was already ongoing. And now we have 5 destroyers off the Syrian coastline. We have landing equipment, the amphibious San Antonio landing ship. This is a very serious crossroads, because at the same time, the Russians have a naval base in southern Syria at the port of Tartus. They are deploying naval ships. I don't suspect that they will confront the Western military alliance. But what is very significant is the Russians are involved on the ground assisting the Syrians in S-300 air defense system. There are other air defense hardware which is installed. This is not going to be an easy Libya-style operation. It will be a confrontation which will result in massive civilian casualties. The United States has said we will target military targets. Well, we know what that means. It's a blitzkrieg, it's shock and awe. You go in and you bomb the hell out of the country. That's what they want to do. They have 60 days from the US Congress. That's a long period to bomb a country with all the sorties. And I think what is now impeding this military agenda is the fact that several members of the so-called international community of the Western Military Alliance have expressed some hesitation with regard to supporting the U.S. initiative. There are problems with the British Parliament. The Russian President Vladimir Putin has actually accused Secretary of State of lying, which is, of course, in a sense, it's a new development in post World War II diplomacy, that you should actually accuse a U.S. Secretary of State of lying, but he is actually right. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is lying, and on the other hand, he is supporting al-Qaeda in Syria. And we have ample evidence that under the global war on terrorism, which is in effect the central pillar of U.S. military doctrine, the United States is actually supporting a terrorist organization involved in countless atrocities. And so it creates, in a sense, a contradiction in the whole, the whole rhetoric, particularly at the crossroads of 9/11, the 12th year commemoration of 9/11. You can't simply say, well, we're waging a global war on terrorism, and then literally confirmed that, in fact, the United States is supporting the terrorists in Syria. It's not to say that they haven't supported terrorists previously, but now they're doing it overtly. They're doing it very openly, with John McCain going into Syria illegally, meeting up with al-Qaeda leaders, people who are known criminals. And so that is the background of this agenda.
Well, we certainly have seen a strange political inversion taking place in all of this, and it strikes me that that's even filtering down to the media disinformation level, where one of the strongest, most strident, and most truthful anti-war reports that I've seen from the U.S. mainstream media in recent days has come from Fox News, which did a very blistering critique of the Obama administration and their support of terrorists in Syria, which I think, going back a few years, that would have been a very surprising development. perhaps to a certain extent this is just part of the left-right political football game, but at any rate, it is making some strange political bedfellows for an anti-war movement that really hasn't found a home in the war-loving left under President Peace Prize laureate Obama. Can you speak to the strange political inversion that's happening right now and what this means for the anti-war movement?
Well, I find there's some very contradictory tendencies, because on the one hand, you have the Tea Party, which is waging a very well-organized campaign against the war. In other words, it's coming from the, you know, from the right wing of the right wing. It's not mainstream center-left or anything. It's coming from the Tea Party. And under the present circumstances, I think that's a very positive initiative. We have to admit that. On the other hand, you have key leftist figures, I won't mention their names, the well-known, who have come in support of regime change. They may not go as far as saying we have to bomb, but in fact they are supportive of the main U.S. foreign policy agenda, and they are prepared to dismiss and close their eyes on the atrocities committed by the al-Nusra rebels, which in effect are the foot soldiers of the Western Military Alliance. So that the so-called progressive left in the United States and also in Western Europe are in fact supportive, and they are providing ammunition, political ammunition, to leaders who are in fact liars. Okay, instead of revealing the lie, they're saying, well, it's okay to lie because this is an important endeavor to establish democracy in Syria. And in fact, they did the same thing with regard to Libya. They justified the bombing of a small sovereign country. Whatever one's views are, NATO intervened with massive bombings. And it's interesting to note that the British Ministry of Defense has actually gone on record saying that Libya was one thing and this will be a much bloodier, of course, in the very British sense of the word, it will be a bloodier war than that of Libya. Those are analysts of the Ministry of Defense who are actually saying that. So that we can, I would say that their assessment is correct. It will be a much more bloody war than the one which characterized Libya. It could be longer than that, but it will be a much more, it will be a bloodier war. It could lead to escalation. You have the Russians, the Iranians who are there supporting the Syrian military. You have Israel, which will inevitably be involved both in the ground war as well as in the air campaign. There's a lot of coordination taking place between Tel Aviv, Brussels, Istanbul, and Washington. These are the heavyweights, NATO, Turkey, the United States, and of course France and Britain are there as well. Germany is officially not involved, and they may be supportive behind the scenes, but the fact that the German government has said it will not support this venture is, of course, a very significant development.
So then I suppose the question is, where do the people who are concerned about this war go from here? Because if the last 10 years have taught us anything, it's that the U.S. administration does not listen to the voice of the people, even in deeply unpopular wartime situations. So is there an outlet for anti-war sentiment left in the Western political establishment? And if so, how do people express that?
Well, the anti-war sentiment has already been manipulated to the nth degree. It's the anti-war movement is infiltrated. In fact, we haven't really built an anti-war movement or network across the land since the build-up for the war in Iraq. Okay, that's when we had a really significant anti-war movement, but it was mainly street events. It wasn't a network. It did not question the legitimacy of people in high office who are war criminals. And that's what we have to do. And it has to be something across the land. It has to be everywhere, across the United States, Canada, Western Europe, Israel. Because ultimately, this war is also going to backlash on the empire, and it's going to impoverish the world population. It bears a symbiotic relationship to the economic crisis. And what you're saying is, in fact, the way in which they're going to implement this war is through the Homeland Security apparatus, is by the derogation of civil liberties. Anybody who speaks out against the war, once this war gets going, or even before, is in fact categorized as a terrorist. In other words, they're going to criminalize the anti-war movement, and the real anti-war movement, not the fake anti-war movement. And I was shocked by the fact that here in Canada, one of the anti-war collectors said, well, we're only going to have street events if the war breaks out. We're not going to do it before. So that they're really waiting for the fait accompli, that the war occurs and then we start protesting. But I think we have to understand that democracy in the Western world is defunct. Civil liberties have been derogated through various pieces of legislation right from 2001 onwards. Extrajudicial killings are authorized, so that in effect, what the U.S. administration is doing is not seeking the support of the American public by any means. It is saying we will go ahead with this war irrespective. And we see that the polls indicate that the vast majority of Americans are opposed to this war. In fact, there's data circulating on the internet to that effect, that it's in excess of 90%. So that in a democracy, one would expect that the Commander-in-Chief, President Obama, would actually listen to these voices. And also listen to the U.S. Congress, in as much as the U.S. Congress maybe, in a sense, reflect those statements of the broader U.S. public. But I should say that the U.S. Congress and the U.S. Senate in particular, they are controlled by the lobby groups. And we know that the main lobby groups are the oil companies, Wall Street, but also the so-called defense contractors. And we know that Obama is supported by the defense contractors financially, his election campaigns, so that in effect, Obama is a proxy. He obeys orders, and those orders emanate from the major corporate powers. And the military industry in the United States is a very profitable industry, but it requires that those weapon systems be consumed, so to speak. And every single cruise missile is worth more than $1 million. So they know that, and they are pushing for this war to be undertaken. And then, of course, there's the interests of the oil companies, oil pipelines. We're talking about a region of the world which has more than 60% of the global oil and gas reserves. I'm not talking about Syria specifically, but all that broader region, Middle East, Central Asia, from the tip of Saudi Arabia up to the Caspian Sea Basin and then to Central Asia and the Chinese border, that area encompasses more than 60% of global oil and gas reserves. The United States of America, something of order of 2%. So we can see the asymmetry. That oil and gas lies in Muslim lands. And consequently, you demonize the Muslims and you wage war on Arab countries with a view to securing strategic and economic objectives. Syria is a hub in the Middle East. It has borders with Turkey. It has borders with Iraq, with Israel, with Palestine, and it has also it's very close to Iran. And it is an area in the Middle East which is at the crossroads of major pipeline routes, It has a very strategic position in the Eastern Mediterranean, and that is ultimately the purpose of this war. It is to destroy a country, and as Wesley Clark put it several years back, it is to destroy. That was from his quotation, is to destroy seven countries and remove the governments in 5 years. Well, they haven't done it in 5 years, but the list of countries is certainly there. And we are in a sequence of military operations. It is a war. It is a roadmap. It is extremely dangerous because ultimately it confronts Russia and China. It could lead to a confrontation in terms of nuclear weapons. This is something which is very important because, in effect, now the United States has developed what they call the mini nukes. They're called tactical nuclear weapons, and they've been recategorized by the U.S. Senate. That was back in 2002 as theater weapons, that they can be used in the war theater, and it doesn't require the approval of the commander in chief. It is part of the toolkit of theater wars, and those tactical nuclear weapons have an explosive capacity between 1/3 and 6 times a Hiroshima bomb. They're using very sophisticated weapons and very deadly weapons. And let us also address the issue of chemical weapons, because the United States has been using chemical weapons for more than half a century, and it has used them against millions of civilians, including the use of Agent Orange in Vietnam, which happened to have been produced by another well-known company called Monsanto. And Monsanto is part of the agenda because Monsanto is destroying agriculture worldwide. And that's another form of warfare. It's the whole process of bringing in biotechnology, as well as the reforms which are implemented on the orders of Wall Street through the IMF World Bank, which consist in undermining the economic sovereignty and the national economy of these countries. So we're in a very complex situation. And we must address, of course, the fact that the United States and its NATO allies constitute a formidable force, military force, unprecedented in world history. But ultimately, we must also address the fact that there are capabilities on the other side. And those capabilities are also supported by advanced military technology, which is that of Russia, China, and also Iran up to a point. And then the question is, if a major theater war is undertaken, will it be sustainable? Will the United States be able to proceed? And will it be able to proceed without the temptation of using tactical nuclear weapons in the conventional war theater? So that there's always that possibility that it could degenerate into a nuclear war. And I should mention that Iran is also the target. As analysts have suggested, the road to Tehran goes through Damascus. This is a stepping stone for war in Iran. And the United States has already set its targets in Iran. And several of those targets are the nuclear energy facilities, which are there, and they said, well, we're going to knock them down with bunker buster bombs. If they do that, we have another Fukushima. Essentially, we have without the use of nuclear weapons, those attacks would create a humanitarian catastrophe, extending not only in the Middle East and Central Asia, but potentially eastwards to other Asian countries. So that when we piece together all these different dimensions, which are exceedingly complex, which we've analyzed in the course of the last 10 years or 10 or 12 years, we must address the fact that this potentially is a World War III scenario. I'm not suggesting that this is World War III. We're hoping that we will be able to avert this war. But we have to understand that this massive deployment, the process of escalation, which is planned, it's not simply spontaneous. It is planned. It's part of scenarios which the Pentagon is already envisaging. It is part of a program of world conquest, which is already formulated. It's a military conquest of the world and military economic conquest of the world. So there we are. One feels a certain sense of despair in the independent media of not being able to reverse the tide. But essentially, the message is organize across the land, everywhere. Spread the word, irrespective of political, of political cleavages. Beware of the so-called progressives because they distort what's going on. Let us unite across the land in making this war an impossibility. The way this is not done through anti-war sentiment. You don't disengage a war by saying, please, President Obama, could you stop? Doesn't make sense. No, you don't do that. You have to question the legitimacy of the military agenda, of the actors who are war criminals. You have to break the consensus. You have to break the media consensus, which is also criminal, so that we're in an inquisitorial type of environment where the media supports something which is a lie and the lie becomes the truth, so that ultimately we can't simply say we're against the war, please don't wage war, etc., etc. No, we have to be far more forceful. We have to unseat these people ultimately. But the way to unseat them is to question their legitimacy, is to reveal that they are war criminals, to reveal that they're liars. And we have, in a sense, when Obama was presenting in St. Petersburg, last week, I had a feeling that ultimately that objective was being achieved because he had no leg to stand on. His whole rhetoric was falling like a deck of cards. And one of the major issues, which one of the major concepts which will derail this military agenda is 9/11 truth. Because 9/11 truth, in effect, also questions the legitimacy of the global war on terrorism, which was initiated in the wake of 9/11 and in response to 9/11. But now we see that the global war on terrorism is a fabrication. We've known that. But now we see from John Kerry, John McCain, and President Obama that they are directly supporting the terrorists. And we know that those terrorists are trained by Western forces. Why? Because we even have CNN reports which say it. So that put the various pieces together, connect the dots, say no to this war, and confront your member of Congress, your senator, across the land, everywhere. Flood the internet with stop the war, flood the U.S. Congress, and may peace ultimately prevail. This is an important crossroads in our history.
It certainly is, well, a very strident message, and I certainly hope it has been received by the listenership out there. Professor Chasidovsky, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.